is going on, everybody? You are listening to a bonus episode of the OKBeast podcast, a weekly show where we get together to talk about the biggest topics in video games and culture. I'm your host for the day, Alex Van Aken, and this week I am joined by Steve Spawn, the COO and Community Outreach Director for Able Gamers Charity. Hello, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Alex. How's it going tonight?
It's going very well. It was I took a bit of a personal day today, I pretty much just sat at home and played The Division, so it's been a pretty good day so far.
Sounds like a good mental health day to me.
Exactly. So, Steve, for those who don't know who you are, could you tell us a bit about yourself and Able Gamers?
Yeah, sure. So, as you said, my name is Steve Spawn. I am the Chief Operations Officer of Able Gamers, which essentially means that I manage day-to-day operations, putting out fires, reaching out to people as best I can to raise awareness for what we do.
For sure.
We're a charity that essentially helps people with disabilities be able to play games again, no matter what that means, whether they need a new controller to access video games, or they need shown particular options to play a kind of game they want, or maybe it's just repairing or improving something that they've already built themselves. You know,
a lot of people
with disabilities are, a lot of people with disabilities are super ingenuitive. You know, we figure out ways to do things, even if you're not particularly meant to do it that way. We'll figure it out.
A few years ago, I helped start a nonprofit myself. And so I know, like, there's just so much back end and things that people don't even know that you do, that you are doing. And I know it becomes your life when you are representing a charity and it's your mission.
Yeah.
And so I can relate to that. But so what are some of the things that people might not know that you do? Is it a lot of like networking and reaching out, or is it more so talking to the people like, in the field, so to speak?
You know, I think that depends which person from Able Gamers you would ask what we do. You know, when we started this thing, it was, you know, just me and Mark Varley in a dream to make this into something big. And we got it from a blog that was actually about EverQuest, that ancient game from 1847.
Yeah.
And it escalated, you know. It just kept being something that was more and more in demand. And, you know, we started thinking that we were going to help a few people. And the more we grew and the more we learned as we went, we found out that now, today's numbers, that there are between 27 and 45 million people with disabilities just on this side of the world
that
need help. So,
man, that
it's a big topic.
Yeah, really. So does Able Gamers, is the charity more so in the business of connecting people to the right people and helping people have resources? Or do you have in-house resources you mentioned like helping fix controllers or, you know, helping to build, devices to help people overcome certain challenges? Is that something that is more handled in-house, or are you about connecting people to get that done?
Yeah, our entire model is about helping people with disabilities, no matter what that means. You know, when we started, it was just a matter of relaying information or figuring out ways that people might be able to tackle problems in a different way than they already were, or in a more efficient way as we could see it. And today, now we help people by giving them controllers. We take in donations from the public and from corporations when they're willing to give it, and turn around and take that money and turn it into controllers, whether that means giving one that's off the shelf, like the Xbox Adaptive Controller, or whether that means going into our 3D printing research and development laboratory and building one from the ground up and everything in between.
That's amazing. Holy cow.
And then, to go even further, we have a program called Expansion Packs, which, you know, I'm sure some of you have heard of. You know, down in New Orleans, in New York, we've gone into hospitals and we build entire parts of rooms where people can come in and they can play just like everyone else, no matter what the current challenge that they're facing in a hospital might be.
That's incredible. How many expansion packs do you all sponsor? I assume they seem like, because I was actually looking on your site earlier and saw those. Are those more so, you know, temporary events, or are those are like permanent spaces, correct?
No, those are permanent setups. Amazing. And that's why we don't have a billion of them out there.
Sure.
Yeah, these are lifetime commitments between Able Gamers and a hospital, where we commit to training their staff, and we bring them equipment, and if the equipment breaks, then we fix it, or if someone needs something special, they call us for help. So these are lifetime contracts. We currently have 6 expansion packs, mainly from the Midwest to the East Coast, and we're pushing out, you know, throughout the year. We hope to have one in Canada by the end of this year. So it's one of those things that it's not going as fast as we would like, because, you know, it's a lot of capital to raise to just do one. It costs about $10,000 to $12,000 just to set one up, get in our crew, train the staff. Yeah, it's not cheap. So, you know, when we're not a huge charity. Sure, you hear our name everywhere, but, you know, we're largely dependent on, you know, generosity of individuals, as unfortunately, healthcare has not yet caught up to how important video games are as we see them.
Well, that being said, everybody listening, head over to ablegamers.org. You can donate over there. Help get some more of those expansion packs going. Steve, I want to talk a bit about video games right now that you have been playing. We always start the show off that way. So what games have you been playing lately?
I mean, I recently started into Division 2 like everyone else and their grandma. Just because it's fun, it's exciting. Ubisoft is really trying to be good to the accessibility audience, so we work with them as much as we can.
That's awesome.
But I'm always going to be a Rocket League fan. I love my Rocket cars. Playing Rocket Hockey is my addiction. So,
oh, that's amazing. Rocket League is the game that I want to be really good at, but I have difficulty. I don't know. I think it's just all the angles in which that you can drive. I just have trouble with, like, I guess my character orientation. I lose myself in the space a lot driving around. But my wife and I occasionally pull up and play against the computer, and it's a lot of fun.
That's amazing. Yeah. I have a lot of fun with that, especially playing the hockey mode is just too much fun. But
the one that I really liked was where the floor kind of fell out.
Ah, Dropout. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that one a lot. I felt like that one was like chaotic enough that everyone didn't know what was happening. And so I had like a better chance of surviving, or at least some more even odds.
Yeah, it's one of those like sci-fi kind of things, like, oh, the floor is gone.
Yeah, and I booted up the Division 2 today. Did you play the Division 1 much?
You know, I didn't play a ton of Division 1. I played enough to know that I would like Division 2. It's one of those games, like, you know, you wanted to get into it, and then unfortunately the hackers got a hold of it, and that kind of turned me off. So, you know. I'm looking forward to what they did to stop that this time around.
Yeah. I wasn't even sure if I was going to pick it up because I'm like just so engrossed in Apex Legends. But I on a whim, I picked it up. Actually, Colleague Adams was streaming it on, I think, Saturday or Sunday. And I tuned in and was just kind of like chilling in the chat. And I was like, man, this game looks really good. I think I need to pick it up. So I started it today. I love the world, like Washington, D.C. Yes. I grew up near there, actually. And so it was kind of cool to, not that it's like a you know, super accurate depiction. I mean, it's pretty accurate, but it's just fun to run around that city, I think, and cause some havoc. But
yeah, no, I love actually, Able Gamers headquarters is only an hour outside of D.C. So,
oh, that's awesome.
It's always really cool to be like, I've seen that building.
I've been there. I know that street.
Yeah.
But let's move on. Before we do, though, just want to say again, ablegamers.org is where you can go to support, find out more information, donate. And then also, if you are an OK Beast podcast usual listener, don't forget we're headed to PAX East. So come hang out with us. Come say hello. Let's get a bite to eat. Let's play some games together. It's going to be a blast. So we will see you next week there. And then, of course, OKBeast.com is the place to go for all of our coverage, our podcasts, our videos, and our articles, all that fun stuff. With that being said, Steve, I would love to talk about the Xbox Adaptive Controller, because I know you had a big part about that. You've spoken a lot about that in the past, I believe. So can you catch people up to speed on what this is? I know we've talked about it on the show before, but you are more intimate with you were, I believe, consulted on this product, right?
Correct. Yeah. We toiled away for 3.5 years in secrecy working with Microsoft on this project, and you know, it was definitely one of the highlights of my year last year, and that's saying something considering I also won the video game awards.
Right. Thing, so.
Yeah, it was a good year last year.
So what was that process like? Did you approach Microsoft? Did Microsoft approach Able Gamers? How did that whole relationship work out?
Yeah, one of the main people behind it, Bryce Johnson, is one of the tech engineers on the whole project. And mm-hmm. he had known Able Gamers and had known myself and Craig Kaufman, my program director, for Able Gamers for a long time. And we had shown him our controller called the Adroit Switchblade, which was essentially what you see today in the Xbox Adaptive Controller. Just a black box that you could plug in switches and suddenly would make it an Xbox controller. And, mm-hmm. One of their people had made a version of a controller for people with disabilities. They knew our controller existed and they, sort of brought us in and said, well, we want to show you this thing. It's really, really cool. We think you're going to like it. And it became a lot of meetings just going back and forth, deciding, what it was going to be.
What does the Xbox adapter, because I imagine, having something by like an official Microsoft product that you can easily just head to their website and order. Is that, I assume that's a huge win, right? Like does the Xbox adaptive controller platform kind of, does that satisfy a lot of needs, or is there still work that needs to be done as far as controllers go? And I'm sure that there's always going to be a unique scenario where somebody might need, specialized devices, but does the adaptive controller solve a lot of needs?
So the Xbox adaptive controller does what it was supposed to do. And it was supposed to be an entry level device into gaming. For a very specific audience of people. Okay. Yeah. And, one of the biggest PR nightmares that we've had since that Super Bowl commercial is people buying the controller and then going, well, I bought this because I thought this was going to make me game and I can't use it. And we're like, well, no. Did you look into what it was? Did the store explain to you what it needs, when you buy it? Mm. Straight out of the box, it's not worth it for a lot of people to have this device. It needs plugins. It needs third-party adaptive pieces. It needs a joystick. It needs, other things to make this work as it's intended to be. It was intended to be a hub, sort of like how your computer wouldn't be so great if you didn't have a keyboard and a headset. Exactly. Yeah. So, your computer by itself may be amazing, but without those extra parts, kind of not so useful.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
So it's one of those mixed bag of tricks, right? It's like it's an amazing thing. Unfortunately, in order to really penetrate the market and make people understand how important it is for people with disabilities, a lot of the marketing material was aimed and skewed towards equality and how we need to pay attention to the base problem and mm-hmm. not that, there were additional things you would have to buy, you'd have to, put together on your own.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things where I'm glad they did it. I'm glad we were able to help. It was an amazing honor. I went on a 2-week tour pretty much for Microsoft, talking about this controller back in November. And
that's awesome.
Although that was fun and I was happy to do it for them, I kept trying to tell everybody, listen, this is going to need other things. And in order for you to make this work, it's still a $300, $400 investment.
Yeah. So, because what, the base adaptive controller is $100, right?
Right. Yes. Okay. And that's a lot of what they base their marketing around, is it's only $100.
But that's not all you need.
Nope.
Most of the time.
Yeah, there's an asterisk on there. It's like $100, but there's more. Mm. So, yeah. I think it's just important that we get it out there that it's not as cheap and easy as we wish it was. Especially from a charity angle. One of the things that we've heard a couple of times, thank goodness, not a lot, but from a few people, it's like, well, you have the adaptive controller from Xbox now, so just buy a bunch of those, and then, your mission is solved. It's like, wow. No.
This ain't it, Chief.
Yeah, exactly.
So how does somebody go about tracking down the extra pieces needed to complete this device? Because I know I did some research. I noticed that there's, I believe AbleNet was one resource. Like, how easy is it to track down these extra pieces and figuring out what do I need, what all of that stuff?
Well, here's the unfortunate thing to it. It is easy to track down parts that work with it because it's just 3.5 millimeter switches. You can go to Google 3.5 millimeter switches, and you're going to come up with a bazillion options, and there you go. You can buy them. The problem is that not every joystick works with it. Not every third-party device works with it. And some of them only work half the way. So how do you know that ahead of time? Well, you don't unless you have someone who has been there, who has, you know, seen this and done this. And that's really where we come in is, you know, when we get a message to our ticket system that goes, hey, I bought one of these, you know, what do I do? You know, we get to say, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't have bought that. Maybe you should have bought this. Check this device out. Or, you know, well, it can do this. Maybe you need, you know, this, this, and this. You know, and then they can go out there and they can buy it on their own. Or if, you know, they need help, we can help them do that.
And I feel like, and I could be wrong, I didn't see it in my local store. I feel like a huge step would be getting this on store shelves, right?
It's in all of the Microsoft stores, but they're not pushing it out to GameStops or Walmarts or anything like that, which I think is kind of sad because I get they want to bring people in-house, but Walmarts and GameStops are a lot more proliferated around the country than just the Microsoft store.
Yeah, I think there's one. I'm in the Denver area, and I think there might be one Microsoft store near me, and I think it's an hour drive away. Ouch. And I probably will never go to it, and I probably and I've never been, so I imagine people are going to Walmart. They're going to Target. You'd think that that would be, you know, a smart move is to get them on those shelves, right? So
it would be nice. I can understand why they may not want to throw it out in the middle of, you know, Walmart. They want people to, you know, come into the store so they can explain and whatnot. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. You know, at the same time, I think maybe a year or two down the road when it's been out for a while, people are more understanding about it. When, you know, messages like the ones we're radiating from Able Gamers saying, hey, you need more info on this. You know, once that gets out there, then I think, you know, it'd be okay for it to be in a Walmart. And I certainly hope they decide to do that. You know, we have Xbox controllers at Walmart. Why not an Xbox adaptive controller?
For sure. I'd like to talk more about, if it's okay, Steve, with the expansion packs. I'm fascinated by this, and I think it's so incredible. What was like, what was the process like getting the first expansion pack opened? How long did that take?
Oh, that was, that's one of my favorite Able Gamer stories. So, we went to a small place outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania that needed, assistance with one of their residents. It was a patient named Zane, and Zane was a Make-A-Wish child, and his wish was to play video games again. Great wish, right? So, fortunately, some of my contacts in Pittsburgh, because I live outside Pittsburgh, you know, reached out to me and said, you know, hey, we've got, you know, this kid, he really wants to play video games. Can you come down and help us out? And, you know, I went on in my own time and was like, hey, how's it going? You know, did my Steve thing and figured out exactly what he would need. And I said, you know, really, you need to set this up as a partnership between between Make-A-Wish and Able Gamers. And they did. They, you know, reached out to us officially and set up the grant for them to, you know, foot the bill, and we would do all the work, and then we would make dreams come true for Zane. And that's what we did.
That's amazing.
You know, the problem was I went into the facility to deliver because I had only seen Zane in a third-party facility down outside of Pittsburgh. I didn't actually go to where he lives, which was in this residence. Where, you know, a whole bunch of people with disabilities are housed and living and, you know, trying to get the healthcare they need in a disability residence. Well, there was 50 people in the facility, and one of them was Zane's brother. And so when I went there, I found myself suddenly bringing in all this amazing equipment to help one person game when there were 49 others that were then looking at me like, hey, and I'm like, oh no. So so I immediately came home that afternoon and jumped into Slack and started talking to leadership, you know, Mark and Craig, and saying, hey, listen, we did this really cool thing today with Make-A-Wish. It went great. I'm happy about it, but at the same time, this feels horrible. Like, I want to help more people in these situations. And we sat down and we decided that, you know, we needed to come up with a way to help more people. So expansion packs were born, and we went into the facility again a few months later, and were able to deliver an entire room where people could go and they could play. And it was touching. It was wonderful. It was great to see, you know, Zane and his brother playing. It was also great because well, I didn't know it at the time, two people who we helped that day play video games, and some of our volunteers got to play with and, you know, have a good interaction with video gaming, they would pass on within a few months of that day. So we got to help them. We got to them before their time in this world was up. And, you know, that's not to bring the podcast down, but that's a lot of what we do is getting to people while they still have time to play. So it was really, for me, I was glad we were able to do it, and that's how expansion packs came to be.
That's incredible. I know you said that each expansion pack takes, you know, anywhere from 10 to 12. I'm assuming they can get even more than that, 10 to 12,000. How long do they take to set up?
You know, it's only about 2 or 3 days. Honestly, we can set up in a hospital in a few hours.
It's just a matter of getting everything together, I imagine.
It's a matter of training. So I can walk into a facility with you, and because I've done this with, you know, other people over at Game Ranks, I've had this happen with people over Kind of Funny. You know, we can have people come and help us, and, you know, you and I can walk into the Denver, Colorado hospital, and we could have this set up in 4.5 hours, but then the nurses are going to look at us like, cool, that's a black box over there. What do I do with it?
Yeah,
so,
okay.
You know, you have to take the time to train, and you have to help the people who are, you know, regulars. What a lot of people I don't think realize is, in a hospital, you have people who have been living there for months and months and months. You know, it's not just an in and out stay for everybody. Some people, particularly who are very disabled, they live there for months. So those people come down and they're like, "Hey, what's going on?" You know, and you need to help them. So
makes sense.
You know, it would involve an entire day of, you know, you setting up an Xbox while I'm explaining to a nurse, and, you know, Prin is over there doing the PR thing, and then Craig's over there setting up a different controller, and, you know, it suddenly becomes a team effort.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, if you're okay with it, we can we get into some listener questions?
Absolutely. Yeah.
First question, a blessing at UA asks, when advising on something like the Xbox adaptive controller, how difficult is it to think of / consider as many different use cases as possible for the product so it can apply to as many needs as possible?
It is impossible to think of every single scenario where someone might need help, or somewhere where someone might run into a barrier or obstacle. What you do is you take the experience you've got and you turn that into as much of a help as you can. So you turn it from a laser-pointed sniper rifle into a shotgun blast, and you hope that you're going to catch as much as you can with just, you know, reaching out in as many different ways. You know, you see the target and you realize that you need to help as many as you can. And, you know, there are people who you may not be able to affect. You may not be able to help, you know, somebody who has a very particular disability, a very particular scenario. And it's just up to them to then come back and say, "Hey, that didn't quite fit what I needed. What can you do?"
Okay. Makes sense. Brian Jackson asks, to your knowledge, is there a legit reason why in 2019 an accessibility option isn't the standard in video games? Does it have something to do with time, money, culture, pride, or maybe just flat out carelessness?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yes to all to that.
You know, so here's the thing. When we started out, we went to GDC, which is currently happening right now. You know, we went there and we set up a camera. And we asked one question in the middle of a hallway in an elevator where we knew we could get lots of people, and said, "Have you ever thought about gaming with disabilities as a designer? Have you ever designed for people with disabilities?" And overwhelmingly, the answer was no. Wow. A few people said yes, they had considered it, and one douchebag laughed at us and walked away.
Wow. Okay.
So, sorry, don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Oh, no, no. I just... I can't imagine.
Wow. I'm very passionate about that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, it was heart-dropping to see that guy laugh, and it was sad to see people say no, and it made us happy when people had said yes. And today, more than a decade later, we have dozens of NDAs where I can't even tell you everything I know coming out in the next 3 years in the video game industry. We have publishers, basically everybody but Nintendo, reaching out to us to ask how to do better with game accessibility. And we have people on the ground. Right now, our executive director, Mark, and our VP, Chris Power, on the ground in GDC. And making friends and doing talks about accessibility where the biggest players from Blizzard, Activision, all the way to Ubisoft and Devolver are listening to what we're saying, and they're adopting our examples, which you could see right now at accessible.games.
That's amazing.
It's a real website. It's a free resource for any developers, whether you're a one-man team or you're a 1,000-man team. It's all the same. And unfortunately, it's a culture shift. You know, yes, yeah. There's money involved. Yes, there's politics involved. Yes, there's awareness that needed to be raised. But it's largely just a shift. It's, accepting the people with disabilities are out there, that they need help, and accepting that we, those of us who are listening to this, either are considered disabled or have somebody who is considered disabled in their lives. Like, for example, a great one I like to tell people is, have you ever used contact lenses or glasses?
I have not.
Do you know somebody who has?
Yes.
They're disabled. Congratulations, you know someone who's disabled. Because we don't like to think of it that way, right? It's just glasses. That's all it is. No, that's disability.
They have a tool that allows them to assist them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
They have a need for technology to compensate something that has physically not gone according to plan. And that's the definition of disability, something you can't do as easily as somebody else. So it's just something that we needed game developers to recognize, that we're not trying to go in there like a bunch of cowboys and go, ha-ha, your game is wrong. And, you know, we want them to do good. We want them to flourish. Mm-hmm. And it took a while for the industry to come around and realize that we were their friends. They're not there to lecture them.
Have you found that when did that shift start taking place? I know that you, Able Gamers yourself, you've been doing this for years and years. Last year, Celeste came out. I felt like there was a lot of hubbub about the assist mode in that game. And I know there's plenty of others that were kind of lauded for their accessibility options. Have you found that, the indie scene has helped push and make that shift happen more quickly? Or is that, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that indie developers being everywhere has really helped push the envelope as far as what can be done and how quickly it can be done. I mean, when you have a game like, say, Raft, which came out not long ago, or even some of the planetary bombardment games, or any of the indies that have really done successful, even Rocket League, was honestly a very tiny game when it came out. It ended up listening to what we needed, and it helped them become more successful because they were able to add in options. Here's the thing. Something that is frustrating for someone who's able-bodied is a complete barrier or non-starter for someone who's disabled. They're very similar problems. It's like, for a good example, right? When you're talking about culture shift, 7 or 8 years ago, I forget how many now, Star Wars The Old Republic won an award from us for being one of the best games out there of the year when we were doing Game of the Year awards. And it's infamously at PAX East, I was on a panel with a guy and he was saying, I don't know that we really deserve this. We just tried to do good game design. And in front of an audience at PAX East, I literally just took him to town saying, good game design is what makes something accessible. When you're making it accessible for one, you're making it accessible for all. Of course, that probably didn't do a lot for me and that guy being friends, but but it did get the point across that, we're just asking for good game design. Where, I really passionately get tired of the game bros who reach out and be like, you want to remove everything that's fun, and you just want us to walk around and not be able to shoot anybody. It's like, no, dude, we just want people to be able to play how they want to play.
Yeah, give us options.
Yeah, what's so bad about options?
Jared Shu asks, what do you think are the necessary steps we need to take as an industry to change the mindset of accessibility in games? We see games implementing more and more options, but what can we do more than control schemes?
It's a systemic problem of being uncomfortable with people who are different from us. And here's where the conversation gets sticky, because it goes out to every minority that there is. Mm-hmm. It goes out to people of color. It goes out to LGBT. It goes out to trans. It goes out to any minority you want to put right here in this sense. It goes out to them, including disability. And the only way that we become more comfortable with seeing a protagonist in a wheelchair, or, somebody who has a limp or needs crutches, being a protagonist is by doing it. and by making it a part of culture and a part of video games, you know, for a long time. And please, any listeners out there, feel free to think about this. When you think about disabilities, or where you've seen disabilities, the person is normally a villain. Think about all your favorite villains throughout history in TV, books, video games. Mm-hmm. Chances are they were scarred, disfigured, or disabled. Because that's how we like to identify people who are, quote-unquote, the bad guys. Because they don't look like us.
Mm.
Well, that needs to change. We need to realize that, you know, maybe somebody in a wheelchair, like myself, can't go out there and, you know, fly around like Superman. But you could get into an Iron Man suit. So, you know, it's just one of those things that needs to change from a perspective of not only the viewer, but the player. You know, players need to reach out and say, hey, listen, EA, we want more things like Apex, where there's a lot of different people to play.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to see the same person in five different haircuts.
Absolutely. A couple more questions and then we'll wrap yep. up. Ryan Othman asks, do you have a favorite or treasured gaming memory? Mine has to be the sense of adventure I had the first time I played Pokemon Blue.
Oh, man.
That's a good one.
You know, that is a good question. Real good question. You know, for me personally, it was thinking that I had no ability to interact with my peers in video games, and then having someone buy a Nintendo for me and show me that I can actually play that Nintendo, and then seeing that when I couldn't go with my friends to the jungle gym or to any of the clubs as I get older, we could drag our Super Nintendo into the garage and play video games for hours. So my favorite memory, quote-unquote, of video games growing up is how it made me be included in what my friends were doing, and that made me want to give that gift to others.
Wow, that's awesome. That reminds me, I feel like some of my favorite moments were actually playing with family. You know, it's like having that connection with somebody, playing Halo 2 with my mom, or like sitting next to my dad and my grandpa, and I would actually sit in, when we'd go home for Thanksgiving, we would sit in the den and we just take turns playing Warcraft 2. And like doing different scenarios, and when somebody would die, or mm-hmm. when eventually you were just overwhelmed with enemies, it was like, all right, right. Somebody else take over.
And that sort of connected moment is really what we're shooting for. I'll tell you a secret, Alex, and for all of you listening out there, Able Gamers is not a video game charity. We're a charity for humans. We use video games as a tool. It's just like you do, mm-hmm. and just like everyone listening does. Because it allows us to connect with our loved ones, our friends, and our family. And that's all we're trying to do.
As we unwind this show, as we you know, start to part, we've got one last question. Eric Bailey asks, what's your go-to game for just zoning out and unwinding?
Oh, man. You know, I have been such a darn fan of the Kingdoms games.
Oh, I haven't played those yet.
Oh, I just cannot recommend it enough. It is the most Zen, chill out, and just listen to some music, talk mm-hmm. to your friends on the phone, or more likely Discord, because none of us really use voicemail. it's great, because you just get to run around and just build a little castle and fight off little cute little zombie things trying to eat you. It's so cool.
I downloaded Slime Rancher recently, because I think
it's the free one on Epic.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't booted it up, but I'm excited to play that. And then I also started playing Abzu for the first time, which has been super relaxing for me. So I definitely recommend those.
Makes me think of the Animal Battle Royale thing they've got going on right now. A little top-down game where you're a raccoon and get to play PUBG. It's so adorable.
I haven't even heard of that. Yeah. I need to look that up.
Yeah, Animal Battle Royale. It's super cute. It's a top-D down isometric game where you're just looking down on like a 2D PUBG battleground, and you get assault rifles and all kinds of PUBG weapons, and you run around as cute little animals and try and destroy each other.
That sounds so, like, I'm a massive battle royale fan, and so that sounds right up my alley. I'm looking at screenshots right now. It looks, the art is gorgeous. I'm downloading this. That's awesome.
Alex is literally like, all right, podcast done. Yep. Gotta go. Bye.
Speaking of podcast, Steve, thank you so much for joining me today. The conversation has been excellent. I'm so thankful that you took time out of your week to be here with me. If people want to go support you, support Able Gamers, where can people find you? Where can they support you? All that fun stuff.
If you want to find Able Gamers, you can do so at Able Gamers on Twitter, on Twitch, on Facebook, MySpace, probably AOL, GeoCities, I don't know, everywhere that the internets exist. And if you want to find me, you can go Steven Spawn. That's on Twitter, that's on Facebook, Twitch. You can find me at my online moniker, Steve N-I-N Spawn S-P-A-W-N. I stream 5 nights a week just to show people on Twitch that you can play video games even if you have a disability.
Perfect. Awesome. Again, if you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget that you can find our episodes every Monday right here at okbeast.com. And if you'd like to support us, head over to patreon.com/okbeast. Don't forget, we will see you at PAX East. So if you see us, come say hi. Let's hang out. All that fun stuff. Steve, thanks so much for joining me. And it's been a great time. We will catch everybody later.